At the outset of the Tokyo Olympics, the head of broadcasting announced that journalists' news feeds would not be highlighting sexualized images of female athletes, focusing on sports appeal, not sex appeal. But are they? The comments came after the German women gymnastics team announced they'd be wearing full-length unitards, down to the ankle. Among the reasons, as one gymnast said, was to be, quote, a role model for young gymnasts who don't feel safe in every situation. Germany's decision came less than a month after Norway's beach handball team was fined 1,500 euros because the women chose shorts instead of bikini bottoms. Officials called the women, quote, inappropriate. Let's bring in Akilah Carter-Francik. She's executive director of the Institute for the Study of Sport, Society, and Social Change at San Jose State University. She's also a former track athlete. Professor, welcome.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Well, thank you for being here. You've been vocal on the topic of the sexualization of women in sports, something that's lingered despite women's rights, despite the Me Too movement, and in spite of protests by women themselves. So what did you think when Germany's gymnastics team unveiled these new full-length unitards?
Well, I was so proud of them. I was overjoyed just to hear them speak up and advocate for themselves and say, you know, this is what we prefer. We're still going to perform to the best of our ability, but we need to also feel comfortable in our own skin and in our own uniforms.
You've written that quote, "It's not about the uniform. It's about allowing women and girls to use sport as a place to feel empowered." So to your mind, being forced into these skimpy, revealing uniforms in many cases makes women and girls feel what? More vulnerable?
You know, I think it begins to devalue who they are. It begins to devalue their voices and the fact that they are full human beings. And many of them still developing as we look at perhaps our gymnasts that are ages of 13, 14, 15, 16, where we often kind of see peak ages. It's an opportunity for them to come into their own, to experience girlhood, to come into womanhood. And this is a place, when we talk about sport, that for many people and for women has served as a safe haven to be able to express themselves and to showcase their skills and talents.
So gymnastics is also a sport, of course, where there have been multiple experiences of sexual abuse by team physicians like Larry Nassar. How does that play into all this, to your mind?
You know, I think it's a bigger message. And, you know, the Olympics has the opportunity to, in many ways, set a standard, an opportunity that we're not just speaking up for the empowerment of young women, but in respect to the abuse that took place, to the protection and the safety of our young women. Sport has, in my view, an opportunity and even a responsibility to help promote these notions of safety and protection, as well as empowerment and celebration.
So these updated IOC guidelines say, quote, no close-ups of body parts. And the IOC says that that's meant to respect the integrity of the athlete. And we're talking about the Olympics here, but this goes well beyond the Olympics. I mean, Paralympian Olympia Breen said that an official told her that her uniform was, quote, too revealing and inappropriate at the European Championships. Many remember the French Tennis Federation objecting to the full-body catsuit worn by Serena Williams at the French Open, and on and on. I wonder, do you see a double standard here, Professor, for uniforms worn by female and male athletes?
Well, I think there definitely is a standard, but I think we need to open up the conversation and really look at things from a systemic perspective when we talk about notions of patriarchy, notions of gender roles, and what is the standard of girlhood, of womanhood, of femininity. And as many of us in our sports scholars world say, you know, sport is a microcosm of society. And so those particular ideologies and practices and norms permeate the walls of sport. And we oftentimes see it reaffirmed, but in that same space, it can also be disrupted. And I think sport has an opportunity, the Olympics again has an opportunity to disrupt some of these social norms, these ideological beliefs about how women need to demonstrate their femininity, how they need to showcase themselves in order to be of value and move beyond this notion of objectifying our young women, our girls, into believing that their value is much more than their body, that it's their mind, their athleticism, their talent, their skill set.
Many analysts have said that historically these dress codes at the Olympics and beyond have been dictated to a large extent by money and commercial interests, and the rules are made mostly by men. Is that true? Would you agree?
Well, let's look and see who is on the IOC committees, who are on the National Olympic committees as far as those in positions of leadership, who are on the respective governing bodies for those sports. And we often see that it is male dominated. In some respects, that domination reflects a tone that does not include a voice of advocacy or allyship from a diversity perspective. When we talk about race, ethnicity, nationality, religion, to even give some respect or an opportunity to acknowledge the diverse range of individuals that would be participating in sport, to include that of women.
So talk about your own experience. You were on the track team at the University of Houston, a hurdler and a long jumper. What was your experience with the uniforms?
Oh, my goodness. We had some challenges with regards to how the uniform was cut, how much it was covering. We had a range of body types. I personally was a long jumper and a hurdler. Very physical and dynamic events, and, you know, really wanted something that covered me up. That was something that could definitely allow me to represent the university, but also kept me covered in spaces and places, if you will, that I did not necessarily want revealed.
So did you feel pressure to do otherwise?
With some of the uniforms, yes. So we had different brands that we also represented, and they were cut differently. And we at one point did say, hey, we want something different because this is a little bit too revealing, and this is the event that I do. And weren't quite comfortable. And I think that is what is important, is when we talk about these uniforms, to bring those athletes into the conversation. What feels comfortable for you? How are you going to best perform? Because yes, we do want something that we can represent, but we also want something that speaks to functionality and doesn't draw attention to other aspects of who we are and place us in that space of sexualization or objectification.
So, Professor, we see these incredible female athletes forced to choose in some cases between wearing what they're told or risk penalties or disqualifications. But do we also discourage women from participating at all? I mean, women who, for religious reasons, might not be able to wear a revealing bodysuit, or maybe teenagers who are uncomfortable wearing an outfit in front of men or boys or teammates. I mean, what do you think about that? Does this in any way take away their agency?
It does. I mean, we're in a space right now where representation matters. You know, seeing these amazing athletes of different genders, sexual orientation, religious, ethnic, nation states represent themselves is so important on this global stage. And to have a uniform serve as a barrier to participation is very problematic. We need to acknowledge that we have different religious affiliations, and those athletes are wanting to represent and participate as well. Those from different, again, ethnicities and cultures that require that modesty. We see some doors opening in some sports, but continued limitations in others. And we've seen that with Iftihaj Muhammad and the success that she's had in fencing, but also wearing the hijab, you know, is something that's very important. I'm appreciative of the women from Germany and from those other countries that have said, this is what we would like to wear. We should not penalize them for wanting to be at their best athletically and not be objectified.
So is it surprising to you, Professor, that at a time when people are becoming more aware of the rights of marginalized groups, that there is slow change? I mean, even resistance to change when it comes to something as easy to change as clothing choices, right? So what's the solution here?
You know, the solution, I think, is bringing everybody to the table. And I know that's often challenging, but we have to create spaces and committees that are diverse, bring those individuals to the table that represent, yes, leadership, but also that encompass diversity. So whether it is appointing or creating a position of a chief diversity officer, if you will, having that vocal and that representation of that athlete voice as a member on these governing boards, that I think is going to be a big component to creating that change.
That's Akilah Carter-Francique. She's executive director of the Institute of the Study of Sport, Society, and Social Change at San Jose State University. Professor, thank you so much.
Thank you.